So welcome everyone, and thank you for coming this morning. In the little incense offering poem verse gatha that was just offered by Sam, he offered the incense to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas throughout the three worlds, and then he said, "May we be companions of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas." What does that mean? We offer incense, and incense is a beautiful smell. So we offer something beautiful, which is really our capacity of our senses. In the same way, to look at a flower is to see something beautiful. To smell a beautiful smell, such as incense, is something wonderful. So we offer these wonderful things to the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. Now, who are they? I mean, are we offering it to this statue? Are we offering this to this painting? It certainly looks that way, doesn't it? Right? So we need to understand, so we're not fooled by appearances, that even though as human beings we like to create forms, so we can touch things, so we can see things, we want to understand the deeper meaning of what's going on. So the image of a Buddha, either in sculpture or painting, is a representation of something much more meaningful. In a certain way, when we offer incense to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas throughout the world, the three worlds, and the three worlds of past, present, and future, we just acknowledge that throughout space and time, throughout history, in the past, in the present, and hopefully in the future, there are beings. Beings are what? People like ourselves. There are beings who dedicate their lives to their own profound healing and transformation, to becoming really what it means to be a human being. To they devote themselves in the same way many of us devote ourselves to our careers, to our hobbies, to our crafts, to our sports, you know, things like that, to achieving our goals. There are other beings who are completely dedicated to awakening the real potentials of their hearts and minds. And then, rather than just doing that for themselves, they share it with others. And fortunately, this has always been, and this is in the present, and hopefully because of those causes and conditions, it will always be. So when we offer incense, it is a reminder to us of this very important and significant journey in life that is available to all of us. And we acknowledge that there are certain beings who really go at it with real sincerity and real diligence and real persistence and consistence and all that good stuff, and have come to deep understandings and realizations about the capacity of the human mind and heart, and have manifested that. And so we acknowledge that, we remember that, and we offer something that is beautiful to it. And then the other interesting phase was he says, we offer it, sort of an offering in gratitude. And then he says, may we be companions of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. I like that one. Companions means what? Friends. Right? So we don't just want these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to be historical figures, to be mythical figures, to be cosmological figures, to be abstract figures. We go, oh no, I want to be friends with them. I want to take these beings as my companions in this life. Can you see that? So we're talking about now relationship. So what is my relationship to these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas? Are they just high beings that I bow down to and pay reverence to and am grateful to and offer things to? Or are they my companions in this life? Can you see it's a very different kind of relationship? So each of us, we are individuals. Each of us are on a journey in this life. Everybody here is on a different journey. Everyone here has grown up in different families, different cultures, different countries perhaps, and the way their life has unfolded, everything is very unique for each of us, right? And we have all kind of thoughts and judgments about what our journey's been like, and whether it's been a good one or a bad one, an easy one or a rough one, but all of us have been on and are on a journey in this life. And in this journey, we've all have relationships, right? We all have companions. Who have been with us, many people in here have been in many different kind of journeys in their life, been in many different scenes, many different activities, and you've had companions in each of them. So the wish to have the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas be my companions in this life is an acknowledgement that one wants these kind of intimate relations with friends who are walking a very meaningful and noble path in this life. You might have noticed as you looked around the world, not that many people are very consciously dedicating their life to a life that is really noble. A life which is really manifesting all these wondrous potentials and qualities of the human heart and mind. Most people's intentions and goals in life are much more pedestrian. People are trying to just get by. And people who have been able to get by usually just want to have more. So those who really look more deeply into life and its meaning and purpose and what really gives happiness and joy, etc., are not the many. So when we set out on a journey that is not necessarily the journey that most people are taking in this life, we want to find good companions, don't we? We want to find good friends to walk with, good friends that we can rely on, that we can trust. And so I think what this verse is implying is that we want to not have our relationship to the teachers and masters of our tradition, living and past, to be impersonal, abstract, distant. We want to feel close with them. These are men and women who have taken the same journey that we've taken. They are human beings just like ourselves. They did not begin in enlightenment. Right? As it said in Buddhism, the beautiful lotus grows out of the mud, grows out of the muck of the swamp. And so our journey for each of us begins in the swamp. Right? But we know through the practices that are available to us in our tradition, we can grow a beautiful flower. Our life can become a beautiful flower. We all have that potential. So we want to feel not a distance or remoteness of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the enlightened beings, the teachers and masters, like, oh, they're special. They're unique. I'm just mucking around in the muck. And that's probably all I'll ever get. No. We want to have this sense that this is a journey that everyone can take, and that every great master and enlightened being has taken this journey and began where we are. But because we that trust, that confidence, that faith in that is often just very flickering. It's not very strong, it's not very bright, it's not very consistent, it's actually fairly inconsistent. Therefore, we need good companions, don't we? And so this verse says, I'm not just offering gratitude to you, but be my buddy in this life, be my friend. And let me experience. We want to. It's a beautiful phrase. May I be companion of a Buddhist and Bodhisattvas. You know, that's like a. That's not like just a one-time thing. That's like a daily thing. You know, that wherever we are, wherever our life is, wherever we live, or family, relationships, work. We are aware that we have these companions. Because often the environment we're in is not reinforcing and supporting our desire for awakening and transformation, is it? If anything, it's watering very different kinds of seeds. So we have to be very deliberate in consciously connecting with those forces in the world that can nurture this nascent or somewhat fragile desire we have for healing and transformation, awakening. Sangha. This is a good place because when we come here, the environment, the teachings nurture. But we don't live here. We live in our life. And so we want to feel, many of us may be on different journeys of life, but when we feel connection, when we know we have good friends, we have people who care about us, we know we're not alone. Right? So even when we're somewhere, we don't lose the sense, we don't think we're alone, because we know we are connected. We have good friends, we have good support. So this verse is quite deep. And I think, again, it's inviting us to enter into this stream of teaching and teachers in a very personal way. May I be companions of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas is a wonderful daily intention. And again, so when we read about the lives of the masters of the past, of the Buddha, of his disciples in 2,600 years, you know, many, in all the Buddhist traditions and lineages, many accounts of the teachers and teachings. When we read their teachings, when we hear about their lives, we should not feel like they're somehow elevated, but they are people like ourselves who just did the work. In the same way, in this lifetime, when we encounter, when we hear, when we read about great teachers and masters, we should not think that they are superhuman. They're just like us. They have eyes, they have ears, they have noses. You know, they go to the bathroom. They're subject to sickness, old age, and death. You know, they have their struggles too. They have their challenges too. But when we see them as our companions, we understand that they, because of the depth of their practice and their commitment and their confidence in it, the way they deal with life may be different than ours. So good. May we be companions, all of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Is there anybody who is first time here today? Oh, okay. So if you're the first time, you may not have realized that for the past year since we purchased this campus, we've been going upstairs and downstairs. We do a little work up here, and we'd be meditating downstairs. We then do a little work downstairs. We come up here, and we've been going back and forth now for well over a year. I have been assured by the powers that be that we today we have arrived. We are home. Even though there is still a little work to be done on this so-called floating wall in terms of painting it and other types of finishings, we are here. And I really want to express my deep appreciation to all the people who have worked so hard to make this happen. Those of you who were here from the beginning, a year ago, August, and walked into this place, you know, it was a very different, unbelievably different place. So this is quite magical to be here, and I want to express my deep gratitude to everyone. You know, it's interesting. We call this a meditation hall, right? And we'll have to find a good name for it. But I'm not sure meditation hall, just as a, I mean, even though we'll give it a nicer name than that, meditation hall, to me, perhaps could be misleading, because it sounds as if, you know, what we do here is some kind of function. You know what I mean? What we do here is we meditate. And so people may get the mistaken idea that we come here to do something called meditation, a technique. And that this technique of meditation, we are working to get better at, to become more competent at, right? To go from getting a D to a C to a B, and if we're really good, eventually we'll get an A in meditation. And many people, unfortunately, kind of evaluate what they're doing in the meditation hall in terms of their meditation practice. Does everybody know what I'm talking about? This is not a meditation hall. This is a transformation hall. That's what this is about. And meditation is only a series of practices, skill set practices or whatever, that we are cultivating to facilitate transformation. Right? We could say this is a hall of awakening, where we wake up. You know, this is a hall where we become real. I often think the story of Pinocchio is a very profound tale of a wooden boy who want it just to become real. That's the journey we're on. Many of us, in a certain way, have become wooden. We've become kind of solid, stuck. Like that. We have lost that softness, that openness that was our birthright. Pinocchio wanted to be real. He wanted to be a real boy. He didn't want to be a puppet. Many of us are puppets. We're puppets of what? We're puppets of our conditioning. We're puppets of our conditioning. We're puppets of our past. We're puppets of our childhood. We're puppets of our habits. You know, that's what's pulling the strings. So we want to become real. We don't want strings pulling us this way and that, and we just like a little wooden figure going whichever way the strings pull us. So even though, you know, in this campus, you know, we have this hall, we have our downstairs, we'll have our kitchen, we'll have our dining area, we'll have our social areas, we have our mindfulness institute, we'll have gardens, you know, we'll have quite beautiful, quite wonderful, beautiful things over these next years that we'll create here together. But to me, this hall is the heart of what we do. It is the transformational. In it, we do the work of transformation. What are we transforming? Ourselves. Right? We never thought of that. Right? We want to transform the world. Right? We want to transform other people, especially those we live with. But you see, when we come here, even though we sit together, we each have our own cushion, don't we? We each have our own mat. Because the core of this work is this capacity to heal and transform ourselves. What does that mean? That really means our minds. Right. Because the strings of our conditioning that are controlling many of us are strings that are only found in our minds. So that is why when we come here, for those of you who are new, and maybe, I don't know, maybe some of you who are new, this is all looks very strange, right? A bunch of people sitting on cushions, not saying anything. Right? It may appear strange. And you know what? It is strange. Right? Because we live in a very abnormal world, right? So going to a place where the music is deafening and people are just jumping around in all directions and there's all kinds of light strobing and people are drinking, right? Everyone go, oh, well, that's normal, right? They're just people having a good time. But seeing people not moving about, where everything is quiet and no one is talking, that is really, in our society, strange, right? Even though we are sitting right next to each other, we don't talk to one another, do we, when we're sitting here? We talk before or afterwards, but we don't. It's strange what we do here. Unless we understand that there's something going on here. And what is to be going on for each of us is that we are using this opportunity of the silence, of the non-moving, of the introspection, to begin to look deeply into what? Yeah, into our own body minds. What am I? Who am I? What's going on in there? In the realm of my body, in the realm of my breath. What am I really seeing with my eyes, hearing with my ears? Right? And then most acutely, what is arising in my mind? Usually when things arise in our mind, thoughts, emotions, memories, we are just swept away. We are swept away continually. Our thoughts move here, we move there. Our thoughts move here, we move here, right? Good thoughts, happy, bad thoughts, unhappy, sad thoughts, sad, you know, anxiety-producing thoughts where we get anxious, hurt thoughts, we get angry, right? I mean, we're just, no matter what kind of thought is arising, we just swept there, swept, like endlessly swept, up and down, back and forth. So when we come to the transformation hall, we stop. And using the tool of mindfulness, using the tools of deep looking, we want to begin to see what is really going on inside me. It's like Pinocchio, you know, finally looking up and going, "Who's pulling my strings?" Right? What a moment for Pinocchio. To realize he thought he was, you know, doing whatever he wanted to do. He didn't realize there was always somebody pulling his strings. If we want to see what's pulling our strings, there's only one place to look, and that's within our own minds. Even if we think our past is pulling our strings, our family, our parents, our relationships, our boss, our, you know, whatever we think is pulling our strings, when we look to where the strings are being pulled, we'll only find one thing. And that's our minds. That's ourselves. But to see that, we have to stop. And we have to get quiet. And we have to develop the capacity to look, you know, what's those famous words? Look within. Look within. We've heard that, you know, just look inside yourself. But what does that mean? How do you do that? And when you see what's inside yourself, then what do you do with it? How do you heal and transform? How do you create a different mind than we have historically carried around with us day after day? So, transformation hall, transformative work. Are there any questions, I mean, about anything I've said here so far today? I mean, anybody doesn't make sense or it's off-base or something? Oh. Yes. Can you just speak up a little bit?
You spoke about talking about achievement. It's not about achievement. And I want to say that and the comments, but I would like to hear your view when you say that. Because it depends on the goal that we have with achievement. We achieve something in order to be there for other people, not at the expense of other people. But achievement doesn't have necessarily to be something that is just all about doing, you know. You have to do it to achieve, but it can be good, in the world that we live in. With policies and with
So, So the question is, I'm repeating it for the camera. The question is, if I heard you right, Fred, earlier today you talked about achievement and really that it's not about achievement, you heard me say, and that a little discordant to you because you said, but hold on, right? I mean, there are good things to be achieved in the world that can be achieved for people, for the world, society, policy, right? I mean, so, is achievement, not only is achievement not all bad, but aren't there good things to be achieved? Did I hear your question right? Yeah. So I'm not going to get into that. because I was talking about something totally different. Okay, when I said that, so that's important. Because that's what you said is very important. You know, how do we manifest in the world and manifest in a meaningful way for our society? But what I'm talking about is meditation. Okay, so this is important. And this is really a very fundamental and very difficult for us. Even people who say they get it, most of my experience is we don't get it. Now, what do I mean by that? Because what Helena just said about society is also the way we go about a lot of our personal lives. We think there are things we need to achieve, even personally, right? Good qualities need to be achieved, need to be gotten, need to be, right? So that model, very personally, that model is based on, I think, a sense that where I am right now is not the place I want to be, and I need to get to achieve a better place, a better state, you know what I mean? So that's the usual movement. And again, in a Judeo-Christian, and I'm not an expert at all, but that's kind of the movement from what? From sin to what? What's the opposite? What? Salvation. Or right. So you know, that is the Western model, that we begin in a bad place, and if we do what we're supposed to do, we will achieve the good place, right? Right. It's a movement from bad to good, from darkness to light, right? That's not the teaching of Buddha. Okay. That's not what his enlightenment and the enlightenment and the awakening of 2,600 years of men, women, throughout space and time, of all types and everything, their experience when they come to awakening is the opposite. Which is what? That we are intrinsically, each and every one of us, Buddha, because intrinsically our true mind, our true nature is undefiled, pure. It has the capacity of incredible wisdom and intelligence just by itself. I don't have to do anything, right? For example, right now I am speaking words, right? They're just coming out. There's nobody here doing anything. And just to make it even more bizarre, everybody here is listening, and you have no idea how that's happening. Right? And there may be some of you who are understanding the words that are being spoken, and you don't even know how that happens, and yet it's happening. this mind of ours has incredible capacities unto itself. We don't have to achieve anything. Is that clear? Water is, in its purest state as it is, pure, right? It is drinkable. If it gets contaminated, right? If it gets dirty, you don't have to throw it out. You can what? You can purify it. You can remove the contaminants, and the essential purity of the water is there. It never left. So that is why, Helena, we say in this tradition, right? Stop achieving in this deep sense. Learn to come home. Right? Your conditioning, your identification of who you think you are and who you think you're not, and I'm a bad person, I'm a good person, I'm a smart person, I'm a stupid person, I'm a lovable person, I'm an unlovable person, the world is safe, the world is unsafe. Do I need to go on? I could go on for years, enumerating everything we think about ourselves in life. All of that is projections of our own mind. That's just fabricated by our minds. Is that clear?
Yes.
What happens when you stop fabricating? What's left? Ah. Yeah. That's why we just want to bring the mind to rest. So we can clearly see our mind's essential nature. Does that make, do you understand? So it's that's why there's got to be a stopping. That's why there's got to be a turning in to see what's really there. That's why we need to stop identifying with the drama and the melodrama and the endless projections of this mind and start turning around and going, right? Where's this all coming from? Where's the projector? Is that clear? Right? You know, you watch something on a screen, it seems very real, doesn't it? You're watching a movie, right? It seems very real. There are people in it, they're doing all kinds of things, they're having all kinds of dramas, and right? A lot of things seem to be happening, don't they? But if we said, what's the source of all that, it would be what? This little disc, right? Is that clear? All of that, which seems so real, is all on what? A disc. That seems incomprehensible to me, right? Now, what if I thought that whatever I saw on the screen was real? Huh? I mean, right? Are you following me? Right? So if we went to the movies, or if we were watching TV, or which we were watching a DVD, and we saw all these endless different kinds of dramas and stories and endlessly going on, what if we thought that was real? Right? I mean, if somebody told you that, you'd say, what about them? Well, you'd say, that's crazy, right? I mean, that's crazy, isn't it? I mean, I'm sort of under the idea that people here do not believe what they see on TV and in the movies, and right? I mean, we would say, that's crazy, that's not real, that's just, you know, it's all on the disc, you play that any time. You could turn it off, it's not real. Well, what do you think's going on in our minds? This endless unfolding of thoughts and memories and pictures and emotions and feeling that never stops. And is always, sometimes it's a good story, sometimes it's a bad story, right? Anyhow, this is worth looking into. This is what we are really doing in meditation. Most of us, because of long-term misuse or lack of training of our mind, often can't just jump right into that, right? So first we have to learn just to quiet and calm our minds. So we get a little space, a little openness, right? A little capacity just to watch and see, mindfulness. And then when we have developed some capacity of mindfulness and of concentration, then we just have now some tools that we can look more deeply into what? Into who and what we are. This is so simple, right? Meditation is simply the practice of learning who and what we really are. It's getting out of who we think we should be, who we think we ought to be or shouldn't be, or, you know, it's just like, really? And who's pulling the strings in my life? Am I really pulling my strings? Or is my conditioning, my past, pulling my strings? And once I see that, you know, do I want to be free? In Buddhism, we call freedom what? Waking up. Wakefulness. You probably heard that term, right? Awakening. When we're awake, we see clearly. When we're awake, we know what's real and what's not real. We know what's a dream and what sleep is and what wakefulness is. Very simple, isn't it? Any other questions about what's been said here today? Yes?
You said it was a transformation.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, again, so the question is, hey, I want a better answer than that. you said it's a transformation hall and you look inwards, but, I mean, is that it? That's your question. It's a journey. It's a journey. And, there are many aspects to this journey. But I would say this stopping and this capacity to be mindful or present so we can see is fundamental. Okay? If I go into a dark room and I want to transform it, I want to paint it, I want to redecorate it, or who knows what I want to do, right? If it's a dark room, I can't do anything. Or if I start painting, it's going to be a mess. So the first thing I have to do is what? I got to turn on the light. Mindfulness is turning on the light. That's why it's so important. Try doing a home improvement project in the dark. Right? It's going to be a mess. So, mindfulness is turning on the light, right? And when we turn on the light, what do we see? We see there are parts of ourselves that what? that are hurting. There are parts of ourselves that are suffering. There are parts of ourselves that are not happy. There are parts of ourselves that maybe are angry or hurt or scared or resentful or sad, or right? So we see, we see that. And so there are things, there are parts of ourselves that then need to be healed so that we can become whole. Because we are not whole because we carry wounds. Right? So there are parts of ourselves that we need to go through a process of healing. And that in itself is transformative, because it means a lot of those inner kind of places of suffering or pain or reactivity that drive our actions and our words and our mind states will no longer be activated if they are healed. So I consider healing very much part of our transformation. But then a lot of the transformation is cultivating. Right? So when we look inside, hopefully we just don't see bleakness. We see good things, right? We see our capacity to love. We see our capacity for kindness. We see our capacity for understanding. We see, there's lots of, we see our capacity for joy, for happiness, for enjoying, right? And so we see there are parts in ourselves, that the same way there are parts that are suffering that need to be healed, there are other parts of ourselves that need to be cultivated, need to be helped to grow, so they can, So it's a, that's why I think Thich Nhat Hanh's calling the traditional path of enlightenment or awakening, calling it a path of healing and transformation, I think kind of gets down to really what it's about in a very personal way. And it's a journey. But again, if the light's not on, it's very easy to not see what's really there, to misinterpret what's really there, because we're just guessing, How do you know how deep this crack is? Right? Unless you really turn on the light and you go into it to see. A lot of times we just touch the surface. We just touch the surface of ourselves. We just touch the surface of our own suffering, of our own dysfunction, of our own maladaption. In the same way, we only touch the surface of our capacities to live open-heartedly, to live spaciously, right? To live in a life of no barriers, freedom. So mindfulness reveals, mindfulness is not the answer, but mindfulness turns on the light. And then again, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, remember we talked about, we're grateful for them, and we're also, we want them to be companions, because there is this vast body of wisdom, of experience, 2,600 years, at least in the Buddhist traditions, and we're not the only tradition, of people who've worked with the mind, who've worked with human sufferings, who've worked with healing and transformation. Millions and millions, hundreds of millions and millions of people for 2,600 years. So that's a rich body of experience that we can access to help us in this journey of, we don't have to make it up, we don't have to stumble about, right? It's like having a, maybe because we've done so much renovation here, but it's like, it's great to have a how to do it manual, right? If we don't know what we're doing, it's great to have a manual. There are many people, I know they get new things and then they go about setting it up. And then it doesn't work. And then they keep trying to, get it to work. And they forgot one important part. Everybody knows what that is? Right, what? Read the manual first. Many of us, we think, who needs a manual?
Yeah.
Right? Who needs a manual? I can figure this one out myself. You know, we need a manual. Because if we could figure it out ourselves, we wouldn't be where we are. Yes. And then I think we'll have to stop, but yes.
Thank you for your gift. I'm a newcomer here today.
Uh-huh.
And I'm perplexed by some of your words.
Good. I'm glad you're asking the questions. Good.
I'm not sure, but you speak to the tension that goes through Pinocchio when he recognizes he's wood and wants to be alive. But you speak to the recognizing you're in darkness and what.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a transformative idea that comes in to speak with
that. Yeah, that's wonderful. So the question is, yeah, there's, you know, what's in the, you know, it's that in between place. You go, all right, we're living in our, you know, we're in the swamp and we see the dry land. And we kind of have a sense, much nicer place to be. But I'm still in the swamp. And it's still cold.
Yeah.
And you said, you know, there's a kind of a tension in that place. Yeah. Yeah, so that's very good. And I'm glad. I mean, that's a good question. Because that's where many of us find ourselves. Right? Yeah. That the kind of stirrings in our consciousness of the possibilities, right, which either are developing from something deep within us that we begin to hear, or because we are exposed to or read or hear, and all of a sudden we intellectually get a sense of possibility. And for many of us, you know, those interact, right? And yet that's a difficult place for people, and that goes on for a long time. I mean, I work with many students, and even for long-term students, there is a sense of possibility and potential, and the sense that it's doable, and yet, you know, here I go again, right? Yeah. So I think the answer, if that's what you're asking, is that's the way it is. And that we need to accept, right? That even though I'm in the swamp, and I can see the dry land, there is a journey. And that journey is not swamp, dry land. In our imagination, that's the way we'd like it to be, right? I mean, that's why so many people are disappointed when they meditate, right? Because they've read the books and they've heard the talks and it all makes perfect sense, and then they sit down and what do they find? Same old garbage, right? And it can be very frustrating to people, or disappointing, or they could give up because they go, what's wrong with me, you know? I've read the books, and I've got the aspiration. I said the prayer right in the beginning, you know? Set my aspiration. You know, what's wrong with me? Well, the lotus blooms in the mud. We have to accept the mud. And again, you've heard me say it before. I mean, that's why I think Thich Nhat Hanh's analogy of composting, you know, you all know that one we've talked about, right? Anybody not familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh's composting? Some, good. Yeah, so it's a beautiful analogy for this. It's, you know, for those you know about composting, you know, composting is the process of working with garbage, right? And usually garbage, if it is, you know, I mean, this is like your vegetable waste, garbage that's left to itself rots. It smells, right? And if you have a pile of garbage and you put a seed or a seedling in it, it will not grow. It's garbage. It's something foul. It rots. Right? But Thich Nhat Hanh's analogy, he says, but to somebody who knows composting, and composting is the capacity of understanding how to work with garbage and turn it into rich soil. Right? It's very wonderful, very simple, but very wonderful. So the composter takes the same materials that is garbage, that is rotting, that has no capacity of ennobling or creating life, and works with it in a very skillful way, and over time, that garbage becomes rich soil, loam. And now when you plant seeds in it, and seedlings in it, they will grow, right? So again, you know, we are where we are, we start where we start. There's no getting away from that. You can't get away from yourself. I mean, over and over I say to people, you cannot distance yourself from yourself, you cannot reject yourself, you cannot judge yourself. He or she is yours to transform. Nobody else is going to do it but you. And if you can't accept him or her as she is and work with her as you know, she is, it's hopeless because nobody else wants to do it. You know, that's like a great wake-up call for many people. You know, in this life, I'm stuck with myself. And if anybody is going to, you know, heal or transform him, it can only be me. Right? And that's just the truth. And when you get that, you stop judging yourself, and you stop distancing yourself, and you stop getting frustrated, and you stop playing all those games, and you get down to the work of what? Of composting. You know, we take the garbage that we find within us, and the garbage means all the afflictive emotions, and all the hurts, and the wounds, and the et cetera, et cetera. We all know what that refers to. And we joyously, right? Anybody here ever work with compost? I mean, can you enjoy it? Yeah. You know, nothing a composter likes than just collecting garbage and getting out there and turning it over and, right? Yeah. In Buddhism, it's called joyful effort. You know? Yeah. Working with the garbage joyfully. Because you know you're creating something good. Yeah, so that's, what is your name?
Stan.
Stanton?
Stanley.
Stan. Yeah, so that's a, you know, the point you're describing is a very important point. It's very fragile. Because if you don't really recognize and understand what's going on, it's very easy to get frustrated, disillusioned, you know what I mean, all kinds of stuff. But when you understand that this is just, you know, this is just what it is, but also, you know, that the more you support and nurture those seeds of transformation within you, you know, that's why we come to Sangha. That's why we come to meditation. That's why we have spiritual friends. That's why we read. That's why, because it nurtures, right? It supports within us that capacity to heal and transform, to change. Until it becomes strong enough, right? That it can stand on its own. But until then, we want to, you know, find as many sources of nurturance for our transformation as we can. That's again, that's why we want to be companions of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Good friends to have on the path. So we will stop here. Thank you.